You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to This Is What We Do here on PodcastJuice.net. Thank you for joining us. And today we're going to get it started as we always do by introducing our guests. But before we do that, I must say that my name is Michael Dean. Welcome. Today we have Mr. Q Storm. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, and I'm currently enjoying my newly purchased Fantastic Four John Byrne Omnibus. I'm really getting into that. So
yes.
Nice.
Yes.
All right. And also we have Mr. Extraordinaire himself, Big Sexy and Sack. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a productive week. Had some Patron Platinum to kick it off with, so I'm okay.
All right. And our resident movie reviewer expert, Mr. Sean Heal. How are you?
Doing good, enjoying this rainy Southern California weather. It's unusual for us, but I love it.
Ah. Oh, boo-hoo.
Hey, I said I love it. gives me an excuse not to go anywhere. I love it.
Right on. And, hey, I have to I'm feeling good because we're actually having some good sunny weather here in Seattle, which is great.
So y'all killing me now. Y'all know we're about to get hit by another 6 inches of snow out here, right? Come on now.
I don't need to hear that. All right. So let's get things started. There's a lot to talk about this week. One of the bigger stories that has been making its way around the net is Spike Lee's rant, if you will, on gentrification taking place in Brooklyn, or has taken place. And this is happening has happened all over the country. It happens here in Seattle, Washington, a long time ago. And so I can relate to some of the things he says. I wanted to play a clip. We started off with playing a clip. Spike is on Anderson Cooper's show on CNN. So we're going to start with that. So here we go. Bear with me here one second.
It's interesting that people move into a neighborhood because they like the neighborhood. They like, I mean, often, you know, it's very, they like that it's a unique neighborhood, that it has personality. But it, even in the process of moving in, as you say, they're not respecting the culture that exists there, that the thing that maybe even attracted them there in the first place.
Well, you know, sometimes there's a saying, you want it, but you don't really want it. And I just hope that there's affordable house for everybody so New York City can stay the great city it is. Because if you have to be a millionaire to live in New York City, New York City is not going to be the great city that it is, because the artists aren't going to be there. You can't afford to send your children to private school. It's just going to be a disaster. We need affordable housing and just whole rethinking of what city is going to be United States of America, in my opinion.
So is somebody who sees the headline about what you were talking about and say you talking against gentrification, to you, is any form of, is there any good that comes out of a neighborhood attracting new people?
There's good, but at what cost? If we lose half of the African-American population in my neighborhood, Fort Greene, and the schools become better, what happened to half the people that left? And it's not just about people own homes. It's also about everybody can't own a home in a neighborhood. People rent. So people can't afford the rent. And we talk about the borough of Brooklyn. After Coney Island, it's the Atlantic Ocean. Where are you going to go?
In terms of the property values for people who have owned a building, you know, for like your family, you were saying, bought in the 60s, and as an area gentrifies, property values go up, people benefit in that way. So I mean, that's a benefit for those who own property, but for those who are renting, you're saying that's not a benefit, obviously.
Yes, everybody is not fortunate enough to own a house. So I'm not going to say there's absolutely no benefits. I'm just saying at what cost. And I just find it interesting that you have to have an influx of white New Yorkers are moving these neighborhoods for the services to go up, for the schools to be better, to get better sanitation, to get more police protection.
Right. Those services should have existed before.
Why not that happen before gentrification?
Right.
We're still paying taxes. We're still New Yorkers.
Right.
All right. And with that, also, let me welcome Aunt Pooh to the show. How you doing, sir?
Hey, fellas. How's it going? Sorry about the delay.
Oh, so good. You're black.
Just
jokes.
Black, y'all. I'm black, y'all.
Oh, Lord.
Black and black. Oh, well, speaking of being black, so we just heard Spike Lee giving his opinions on gentrification in New York and Brooklyn, made some points there. So I'm going to go to Big Sexy and Sack first. So what is your thoughts of this whole thing here?
Well, that's a clip that I hadn't heard yet. I saw another clip from him on Anderson Cooper, and I think took place right after this portion. It's an interesting dilemma because in San Francisco, they were going through the same thing recently. A lot of Latino people who were renting in this one area were being moved out because the person who owned the houses sold them. And so people are saying, well, you know, we're losing artists, we're losing culture. You know what? And I may oversimplify it, but it's like anything else. If you don't own it, you don't have any say. If you like what this is becoming in your area, then you take steps to own it. It's like renting a car and then putting all the hot rod goodies on it. At the end of the day, it's not your car. Period. I've always thought Spike Lee had a bit of a, I don't want to say militant, but he's always had a bit of a anger to him, obviously. And in this case, he's not that wrong because you do need to have the creative people in there, but at the same time, the creative people need to step up and make something happen so they can own these properties. And the same thing happened in West Oakland, because West Oakland back in the 70s, that was your ass, they went to West Oakland. Now, it's not like that anymore. So, you know, people just can't be content to rent in a given area and not be prepared if they want to maintain the character and, for lack of a better word, ownership of that area. You got to invest in some ownership. You just have to.
Yeah, and let me just jump on here to say the other side. You know, I can speak on a personal level. You know, here in Seattle, traditionally there was an area called the CD, the Central District, which was a black area. And over the last, man, probably 20 years at this point, it has changed into a very, very affluent. It used to be sort of a mixed neighborhood, but it's probably more predominantly a white neighborhood now. And you've seen the houses go from, you know, like I think my grandparents, he may have paid, I don't know, less than $50,000 probably for that house way back in the days. You know, now that house is next door to million-dollar plus houses on that entire block, right, in that whole area. And it's amazing to me, like, because I grew up in that area where you knew everybody, you know, that whole neighborhood, we all knew each other. It was predominantly black neighborhood, and we'd all play out there. But now it is like everyone has been priced out. So even the owners of those homes, you know, whether they took the money from the real estaters who would come through and say, hey, you know, I'm going to give you a huge sum of money. Why don't you go ahead and sell this? Or it was, you know, what happens to your property values once the houses surrounding you become a million plus and you've got to pay these very high property taxes? And the thing is, most of these people here are elderly. Like my grandpa, they've been in retired for years. I, to this day, I'm not sure how he is able to hold on to the house. I think I know why, but they're trying to compete with these, you know, very affluent younger people coming in, and the neighborhood has thus changed. Now, it's not changed for the worse. It wasn't necessarily a bad neighborhood to begin with, but it's sad to see everyone sort of have to move out of the city. You know, out of Seattle, because it has become this super, you know, expensive place to stay. Even if you grew up in that area and you were a homeowner, most of those homeowners were very young, and now everyone has had to move. And even like some of the black churches who were in those areas have to, you know, they have to move because the people who used to go to the church just are not going to drive 50 miles every Sunday to come there. So it's just very interesting. I kind of see some of the points he makes. He makes another interesting point too, though, and talks about in terms of police presence and, you know, getting the police to respond to certain things, which you've always sort of heard was an issue, or there just wasn't any police. But now it's to the point where he, you know, makes a point of, you know, you're seeing mothers walking their strollers at 3 a.m. where we could never do that, you know. Q-Storm, I don't know if you have any opinion on this.
Well, I think we're all in agreement on this. It's a shame that people who work, struggle, scrape pennies together, send their kids to schools in the area, and, you know, suffer hardship, they are, once the neighborhood starts to blossom because a certain element comes in, they can't reap the benefits of that. But, you know, to Big Sexy's point, they need to own it. And I just don't, obviously they do, but what are the resources that they have to make that happen? You know, if you're renting and living, you know, but from check to check, how do you go about owning anything in that neighborhood? I mean, the resources weren't there for you before. It wasn't until a certain crowd started moving into the resources become available, and you have no piece of the pie to begin with. So it's a very unfortunate situation. It kind of reminds me of how this country was established. I'm going to go there. The Christopher right. Columbus syndrome.
And that's a word that Spike was saying, right?
I didn't even know that because I didn't hear the whole interview.
Yeah, in the real epic rant that he gave, I think it was at a college or something. He's speaking it somewhere. He's responding to a question somebody's asking him is what sparked this whole thing. And he uses that term. You're not going to Christopher Columbus us and this and that sort of thing. And he's cussing and all that kind of stuff. Go ahead.
I just say real quick. I moved to the East Coast and I lived right outside of Manhattan in Jersey on the west side of the Hudson River. And, you know, I would be up in Harlem quite a bit. And it's just amazing how that neighborhood has changed. It has changed drastically. I mean, just in 97, 98, 99, you would be hard-pressed to find many white faces in Harlem. But now, since Columbia University has expanded, they bought up more property for dorms. 125th Street has just been completely transformed. In my short span of time, I lived right outside of Manhattan for 8 years. It's unbelievable how much that part of Manhattan has changed. Same thing in Hoboken, New Jersey, right across the river.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's even happening here again in sort of the what you call East Lake area of Seattle, where Amazon is doing this amazing expansion where they're literally buying blocks and putting up all these towers. And it has so dramatically changed that area where you basically don't even try to rent. there are houses in this area, so it's all sort of condos and apartments. But it's probably like in New York now where it's like you could live in those areas and it was sort of a cool area to live in, almost sort of hipster style thing. But now it's like if you ain't an engineer working at Amazon, forget about it. Because, you know, they're bringing all these people in who are, you know, have these great jobs and are getting paid a lot of money. And so they can go to these apartment places and say, listen, I don't have no problem paying, you know, $2,000 a month for a 600 square foot place.
Oh, hell no.
Well, I'm just saying, and you know, the manager place is like, well, shit, yeah, let's raise the price. They don't have any problem paying this. So for those people who used to live there and all that, you're just not going to be able to, you can't compete in that. And it's crazy though. You know, for me personally, like I used to live in downtown Seattle and I used to work down there. But if I try to do that now, it'd be ridiculous. It's to the point for me personally right now, I literally live out in the farmland area. Like I'm so far away from Seattle, you know, it's a good 20, 30 minute drive. And I literally live in this area where it is sort of a newer they're trying to develop it a little bit, but it's literally everyone has horses here. You know, it looked like you know, in Purple Rain when they're doing Take Me With You and you're driving down. I mean, that's what it, you know, if I go through the back ways to my job, that's what it's like. And I'm like, but it's cool because I'm like, man, this is crazy, but I'm a city dude and I'm way out here, but you know, it's what I can afford to do. But go ahead.
You brought up a good point, Mike, and I was actually going to say the same thing. With progress, with the upbuilding of things, comes jobs. But unfortunately, the people that are already living there probably don't have the skill set to get those jobs.
Right.
So it's kind of a, you know, it's good that jobs are available, you know, but if they can't get them and then have to be forced to leave, then it's a double-edged sword.
You know, I agree because I was thinking about this as Q was speaking. You know, because my thing is like, well, you know, if you want to live in a certain area, you gotta own blah blah blah. But the thing is, what if you're a person and you don't want to, you know, work 90 hours a week to be able to afford that? What if you just like things how they were? You got a job you like, It's not killing you to go to work. And now they come in and price you out of your own deal. And in order for you to stay, you've got to increase your work output. That's not cool.
Yeah, it's a bigger sort of issue than, you know, Spike Lee.
Yeah,
ranting,
it really is.
You know what I mean? It's a economic thing. You know, it's big business. And yeah, what if there's successful companies, you know, and particularly in Washington, you know, you have Microsoft and Amazon and, you know, Adobe's out here, not that headquartered, but they're big print out here, and just all these other tech places. And there's a lot of money out here. The thing is, though, for the majority of people don't live in Seattle, could never afford, you know, used to live there, but you can never afford to live there now. Like, we all live way outside of that bubble. And just go there to, sad to say, go there to visit at this point.
But, you know, what's funny is, I don't know how, what your guys' experience was like, but when I was growing up, and this was in the Midwest, I don't know if that plays into it as well, but when I was growing up in Indianapolis, it seemed like to me the paradigm was you got out of the city and you were able to afford living in the suburbs. That was the, that was a symbol of status. Now,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe since the late 80s, early 90s, it's completely been reversed.
I think a lot of places, if correct me if I'm wrong, it was you were right. You were affluent to move to the suburbs, but then I think like the sort of lower income was in the city, right?
Right.
And now people are like, you know what? I want to be around the city. I want to be around where all the stuff is. I can just go places and see different, you know, all these new shops and things are opening. But now the city is so attractive, and it's like, who wants to commute 50, 30, exactly. You know what I mean? So far to work like that. Let's go move in the city area. Right. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing, particularly here in this area. You know, it's, you can forget about it, you know.
I think part of that has to do with people delaying having families because, you know, wanting to deal with their careers, so they don't mind living in the city because they don't necessarily have children that they have to want to walk in the park with, or, you know, walk down the street with, or go to the play on the swing. So that I think that has a little bit to do with it as well.
Yeah, yeah. And now the cities have these parks.
Exactly.
You know, yep. So like kind of go to his point to say they have turned it into this family arena. And there is the police presence, and there is all these things when before you just didn't have that. And, you know, to be honest, it's about money. Like, you didn't have no money. Yeah, they don't give a fuck about you. You know, that ain't got to do with
I'm living in the area with what's the guy's name? The rent is too damn high. I forget his name. But
oh, right.
So I hear in the New York, greater metropolitan New York area, this has always been an issue. This has been an issue for quite a while.
Yeah. So, and Pooh, before we move on, any thoughts on it?
Nah, I think you guys hit everything. Y'all hit the nail on the coffin here. My problem is I'm so insular, living in L.A., where everything is so spread out, and there's pockets of ghettos here, and then there's pockets of great neighborhoods, and then there's pockets of great neighborhoods in the ghettos. So it's just about, you know, your comfortability level. People are in L.A., people are... well, the black people, which I feel like they're stupid as fuck for doing this, they're moving out. Well, they are. They're moving out like an hour and a half away to Lancaster, to Moreno Valley, San Bernardino. Oh, because I can get a 4-bedroom house for $1,200 a month. And I'm looking like, okay, that's great, but do you know your commute is going to be 3 hours each way? The fuck wrong with you? Why do you think all these white people are coming back to L.A., moving into Watts, Compton, downtown L.A.? So I'm not really experiencing it because rent's been high all over the place if you want something nice. But that shit is kind of fucked up.
Yeah, and then I see, just to end that, somebody, excuse me, they've spray-painted Spike's father's, I guess, old place where he used to live, and it says "Do the right thing." Somebody wrote 50. That's pretty crazy. So,
I just wanted to comment that I love the fact that Aunt Pooh has assured that when I get this on my feed, it's going to say "explicit material."
Did I miss something?
Evidently, I don't know.
No, it's just the colorful language. That's all. It's all good.
The colorful language.
One thing Spike said yesterday that kind of really resonated was, and it was about his dad. He said his dad had the house that they were in since 1968. Somebody moved in and called the police because he was, you know, playing his upright bass. Now, to me, I'm like, wait a minute. If you, as a consumer, move into an area like, you know, like Anderson said, because they're doing music, because they're being creative, that's what you get. You can't move in and then say, you know what, you need to quit playing the music. No, you don't like what we're doing, get the fuck out. It's that simple. You know, so that part of the rant, I agree with 100%. You can't come in into like a rehearsal space, for instance, because a lot of musicians in Oakland would all be in this giant warehouse district and play all kinds of music. And if a person was to come in there and set up an office, no, you're not going to get it done there because they do music here. And if you don't like that, don't buy here. So when people come to these areas and want to change the character, I have a problem with that.
But real quick, that just made me remember. I don't know if this still happens in Manhattan, at least, but there are certain sky rises or high rises, residential high rises that are, I don't know how they're funded. I guess they're funded by the city or the state, where if you are an artist or a creative person and you can show what your income is, you know, being low, perhaps being lower than, you know, whatever the guidelines are for incomes in your particular state or in the state of New York, the high rise is subsidized by the city. So your rent would remain low as compared to values around you.
Wow.
So I don't know if that's a solution.
All right, well, we're going to keep it moving on this topic. So I wanted to jump around here and talk about this young man who gets hotly debated in my house for whatever reason. Mr. Chris Brown.
Punk.
So, you know, he's had his share of problems going on. But I didn't know this. I was just seeing that he has been in rehab, I think, for the last 20 days or something like that. But he was recently in court, and they basically have come to find that he has he's bipolar, and he's also suffering from PTSD. And he's been ordered to go back into rehab for some more treatment to help himself get better. This makes a lot of sense. Now sort of his actions make some sense to me, because he's basically suffering some mental illness. And all this sort of, you know, anger, you know, obviously the thing with Rihanna, and, you know, he's got other fights and different things going on. Now I can understand, like, this kid, he needs help, and good thing he's getting help, right? Anybody have anything on Chris Brown? I don't know if you guys are fans or not.
Bullshit. That's what I'm saying. Bullshit. You know, it's popular now to, and this is not just him, but it's popular when a celebrity does something stupid, all of a sudden, oh, I need to go to rehab. On top of it, everybody and their cat has been diagnosed with bipolar nowadays. So I don't want to hear that either. And thirdly, PTSD, where is the stress from any trauma that this punk has ever had? Get the fuck out of here. No, I don't want to hear that. Damn. That's some PR. It's bullshit. He's a punk. He's probably using something that we don't know about. That's his problem. And he's a little entitled bastard, and I don't like him.
Wow.
All right, you want to think about that for a second?
And just to be clear, I said 20. He's done, I think, 95 days. He's been in this rehab place. But go ahead.
He's like that little punk in Texas. You know, the guy who wrecked the car and killed those people. Oh, well, I have influenza, so I can't go to jail. I need to be in rehab. Get the fuck out. No. Influenza. No. He's a punk. He needs to get dealt with. Now, if he was a true repentant person, he would just come up and say, you know what? I was drinking too much. I was taking some I shouldn't have taken. I shouldn't put my hands on this woman. I got to go check myself in for something like that. But this PTSD, what is he? He's not some soldier coming back from the war. He's some knucklehead. Nah, I don't hear that, man.
Well, yep. let me just be clarity, because I don't want anybody to say we're talking crazy. This is from the court thing. It says the faculty writes, Mr. Brown became aggressive and acted out physically due to his untreated mental health disorder, severe sleep deprivation, inappropriate self-medicating, doing drugs, and untreated PTSD. They never explained the cause of the PTSD. Letter also says Chris was diagnosed with bipolar 2. So,
when was the Rihanna thing? I mean, what was that? 3 years ago? I think it was probably more than that. Maybe.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah, so 2010. Okay, so 4 years ago. So, and this now, I mean, wasn't he ordered for treatment? That wasn't that part of his sentencing? Get therapy? I mean, wouldn't it have come out during that? I mean, even like a questionnaire type thing. I don't understand how now he's being diagnosed with all that when he's had this kind of treatment in the past.
Well, this says he was in court. It was a progress hearing in the Rihanna beating case. So apparently he's still, I don't know if this 90 some days ago, he finally went into rehab or something. And I think it was, he's been on parole, but he's continually been in trouble. So it's pretty much the judge was like, I'm either put you in jail or put you on, you know, put you in a rehab center or something. That's my understanding.
I was just thinking that I was on board with Big Sexy with his rant. That's also going to get us an explicit language.
sorry, Q.
Big Sexy, y'all killing this, man.
Sorry, Q.
But But the thing is, the fact that it's just been diagnosed, it seems like it lends credence to him, because it seems like he would have used this as an excuse early on when the beating took place, right? So that's the only reason it makes me think maybe there's some validity to this.
He's, okay. I mean, again, we don't know what this maybe guy not. Has been through. He is a young dude. He's in the entertainment. I can imagine he's stressed, obviously. It may not be, you know, legitimate in terms of our, you know, base level, but he's the reason why he's an ass. Right, I don't think he was born an asshole. He's probably been babied.
That's why.
You know, there's no dad. I don't see any dad or any male in his life. And he's been given the world and, you know, realizes that shit ain't working for him. You know, and he's on drugs, obviously. You know, he's a troubled dude. You know, so I just hope that this is the thing that gets him, get his shit together. And, you know, if this don't work, I say they throw him in jail. You know, you should do
Mike,
go ahead.
Mike, I'd probably say you had that half right. He's a bitch ass dude.
Yeah, hey, I can argue.
He's the, as far as I'm concerned, he's the black Lindsay Lohan. He should have been in jail a long time ago.
There it is. You know, all these celebrities get away with, you know, damn near murder. And if it was anybody on this panel, we'd be in the clink.
Yep.
You know, well, and, I'm not with that.
Well, except for you, Big Sexy.
Find a way to get out.
Yeah, you would get out of it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And we also can't say that they don't give us people preferential treatment either. That's out the window.
Well, you know, we were talking, I guess, last week or the week before last about separating the man from the art and the art from the man.
Right.
And that's another cat that I deleted all stuff from my archives. I have no Chris Brown whatsoever in my arsenal. I can't see myself listening to him after, and then think of those pictures of Rihanna and what I mean. He bit her. Who bites? Even women don't even bite. You know what I mean? when they fight. So I mean, yeah. So
wow. The thing is, when you say you separate the man from the art, what art?
Here's well,
wow. Shots fired.
Well, yeah. I'm not saying I'm a fan, but I did have some. I shots like fired. I said, I took them all out.
Is he that? Is he all that anyway with the music?
No. No, hey, but my kids.
He had a couple little cuts. Now,
wait, Sean, you said you had some of his music.
See, that causing the question.
how long have you been a 15-year-old girl?
Let me clarify. I have three kids, two that are older, shots one fired. That's younger. So when I say I have, it's all of our music is all encompassed into one collection.
Okay.
So I have a special family playlist that I listened to with the family, and there was some Chris Brown on there, but I took that Chris Brown off that playlist. So there.
Yeah, I had to clear that up.
So there.
All right. You get off of Chris. Well, there was somebody else I quickly wanted to throw in there. Oh, our guy. This is one of our heroes of podcast juice, Mr. Robin Thicke. I'm joking.
Okay.
Apparently, he has separated from his longtime wife. I think they've been married 9 years, Paula Patton Thicke. And I see in the news, you know, they finally caught up with him, and he's like, you know, I'm trying to get her back. And, you know, speculation in the news was that she sort of felt a certain kind of way after the whole Miley Cyrus performance that he did on, I think it was MTV.
Yeah.
And then there's these pictures that came out with him with some other chicks, and he got tan on the ass and all kind of craziness. And I guess, you know, it was enough was enough. Apparently, you know, I wish no one to get divorced or anything like that, but I don't know if it's karma. What any thoughts?
I know he was on I forget some show, I think Oprah's something, anyway, and Paula was on there, and she was saying how she was supportive and of the twerking thing. She didn't have a problem with it. I don't know, maybe because he was there when the interview was going on, but it seems like there has to be something else that the media doesn't know about just yet. Because I mean, that twerking thing was almost a year ago, so there has to be something else.
Yeah, like I say, I don't know, bruh.
Isn't this? Well, I saw something, and I can't believe we're even discussing this, but okay, I saw something where Paula Patton was like, you know, I supported him with the Blurred Lines video, through all of that, and I thought it was artistic, and I like a little bit of sexuality. It's creative, and
yeah, something, yeah.
Your husband was up in a video where they had literally women butt naked. So, what are you kind of surprised about? Why are you divorcing the guy now?
Not have really been cool with it. Possibly, I mean, yeah. Maybe she was doing that because I'm a. You know, support this dude in the open, but maybe just all this other stuff, it was just maybe she's like, you know what, man, forget this. And who knows what's yelling in her ear, too. You never know. I mean,
but on the opposite side, she did topless scene, love scene with Denzel. So,
that's different. Yeah. Right.
Just saying.
That's different.
How's that different? I mean, she had to put her goodies.
She's working.
Okay, but he didn't expose anything. She exposed something and did an unnecessary love scene. That's more embarrassing.
Well,
I mean, well, it was her idea to be topless. It wasn't.
Oh, really now?
It wasn't in the script. Yeah, it wasn't in the script. That was her.
That was her suggestion.
That's completely. That's not the same thing.
Okay, but my thing is that her being topless and that sex scene. Period. If you saw Two Guns, had no impact or bearing on the film. It wasn't needed. It really wasn't needed whatsoever. And in the grand scheme, the thing of the film, what did it accomplish? Other than people got to see Paula Patton's nipples.
But that's I could sort of agree on both sides. But I think the video with the naked women is an extreme.
But he wasn't naked.
Video. There's no man's not going to be naked.
What's the point of that video? Why did the women have to be naked, if using that logic?
And that's his choice to make that like that, I would imagine.
Seeing Paula Patton topless and it wasn't a love scene. It was like after they were making and made love, apparently. But that has more context than music video with women just walking around naked.
Well, I think the point is they both made choices to, you know, do nude, not Robin, of course, but Robin made the choice to have nude women in his video. She made the choice to appear half nude in a movie. So neither one of them can get at the other.
Well, he also made the choice to be all up on them hoes.
Exactly.
On the pictures.
Well, yeah.
Which is different.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Now, if a photo comes out with Denzel Washington's hand on Paula's ass during the press conference.
That's we got a problem.
Then you got issues.
Nah, actually, I don't think you got a problem. Paula, Robin don't want none of Denzel.
Well, nah, I don't think Denzel wants any of his wife either. Because I don't think Miss Denzel is having that.
Oh, she's not having that.
All right, let's get off of the TMZ here for a second.
Yeah.
Movie news. In the movies, in the news. All right, so new movie this week. There's been a couple of movies out this week. And let me say, what is the name of the movie with Shania Lathan, Forest Whitaker? Was it Repentance or something like that?
Yeah.
That did not come out in my area, so I'm kind of a little tight about that.
Yeah, you probably, it's very, very limited release.
All right.
I'm hearing you didn't miss anything.
But it's here. I That's see funny. It. It's here in Boothwyn, Pennsylvania. Why is it here?
Boothwyn. Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe there's a bigger audience there or something. But maybe it will come later, hopefully. And then there's also another movie, and I shouldn't even mention it because I don't have the name in front of me. But it's an animation movie by the guy who did.
Oh, I know who you're talking
Princess
about.
Princess Mononoke and all those great movies.
Oh, the Wind Rises.
Wind of Change or Wind...
Something like that, yes.
It's The Wind Rises.
Yes, I want to see that. I may actually go see that tonight or tomorrow. But I think what we did go see is the new Liam Neeson movie, Nonstop. And we're going to talk about that. So first, we're going to go to Sean Heal. Sean, give us the review, your review on this.
All right. It was a good film. Liam Neeson stars as a movie cop and... a very stereotypical movie cop. He's an alcoholic, aren't they all? He's got a failed marriage. Don't all movie cops have that? And he's got a tragic event in his past. So he's got everything that a stereotypical movie cop needs. Film basically is about him. He's an air marshal, and he is involved with some nefarious activity on the plane. It does a good job of setting up the different red herrings. There's several passengers that may or may not be involved in what's going on. I would say the first hour and like 15 minutes is very, very good, but then the third act falls apart. Not when we find out who done it, but I think the why done it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But I do recommend it. It's the best thing playing right now, at least. So definitely check it out. But just be prepared. The third act and kind of falls apart at the end.
All right. In my quick opinion, I actually like this movie. You know, the character you described sounds a lot like John McClane.
Funny you say that, because that's what I titled my review. Okay. A Good Day to Fly Hard.
Hilarious. Yeah, it does sort of like the Die Hard in a plane.
A good flight to Die Hard. Sorry.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, it does play on that. It's that sort of genre, you know, Die Hard in a plane sort of thing. And I like this movie because it sort of gives you this very sort of, I guess you could say it's a high concept, or it's very, you know, distinctive sort of, what do you do? There's a killer on the plane. You don't know who it is. He's going to kill people in every 20 minutes. So it's sort of really a good setup. Like, okay, this is interesting. I agree. Well, when you get to figure out what it is and when they reveal it, I should say, I don't know if you figured it out. But I was kind of like, okay, when I think about it, that some of that has to make sense because there's no way certain things could happen. But I will say it kept me on the edge of my feet, and I was trying to figure it out. I thought, oh, it's this person, or oh, is that, or is this? And it kept sort of switching it up.
Yeah, so, it was definitely successful in that.
Yeah, so I think it was good in that. Liam Neeson, he's to me plays the same character. You know, I don't know if it's the same character out of Taken or something, but I was like, he's just an ass kicker. He's basically the wrong one, you know. And he does his thing. My little nitpicks. Here's my little nitpicks, and this is conspiracy brother nitpicks. When the brother gets on the plane. I'm not going to spoil it. When he's sitting down and the white lady come and ask for a seat, man, don't give up your seat. Now that you know what the movie is, you got to ask yourself, why did he give up his seat? Right?
Yeah.
I just thought about that because it plays into there's a mention of that in the movie. And now that I think about it, why did he give up his seat? Because it looked like he just gave up his seat because the white woman asked him and the white man looking at him. And of course, you don't give up that seat, boy. But anyway.
No, really? We're going to have a problem.
Seriously. Because see, that's how the game of pool works. The last ball.
But I'm saying, in the context of what this movie ends up being, he should have never, he had no reason to give up his seat. Fuck her. Make her go sit where she's supposed to go sit. But anyway. That's
called a screenwriter being, not being able to write his way out of a situation that he needs. You know. One thing, too, that I noticed, I guess it's the high top fade back.
Exactly. I said this to my girlfriend. I said, well, did they have a special on these on the set? Because he got one, and the old girl from 12 Years a Slave got one. I said, when was this filmed? Like, I don't understand. Yeah, they're rocking the Big Daddy Kane cameo look. I was like, wow, two black characters got it. I was like, ain't this a bitch?
And I know Q had not really an issue, but he started a discussion about Nopita in the film and the lack of her lack of usage, I guess is probably the term. I looked up some notes, so I wanted to bring this up real quick. 12 Years a Slave was filmed June 2012 to August 2012, so 2 months. And then this film, Nonstop, was filmed November 2012 to about December. So they probably didn't know – well, I'm sure they didn't know what they had when she was cast.
Right.
So, you know, she definitely didn't have the power to, you know, get her role beefed up. But, you know, probably had it been made a little later, she probably would have been the other stewardess role, and because she really had nothing to do – in the movie at all. I mean, she was basically, I don't want to say that, you know, typical, you know, black character, just, you know, stand aside, darky.
She was just another actor. It really, I mean, they lucked out that whoever had the foresight, she happened to be in this movie, and now we can kind of parlay a little bit of that, but it's just nothing to do with
it. They haven't really played that up in the ads, which is good, not saying, you know, Liam Neeson, Lupita Nyong'o, right. You know, nonstop, you know, they're treating her as they should treat her, as you know, as a character actor in the film. She's not a star, she's not a big role. So
yeah, and the last thing I would just say is there was something else. The last thing I'm gonna say, you know, god, there was something else. I'm being funny, but the other brother with the headphones and all that, but anyway, when I saw the movie, It played very well because I was in a theater, semi-packed theater, and people were clapping throughout the movie, laughing real loud. And then there's the big, you know, slow motion action climax scene. And literally people were like, So it plays well on a Friday night, Saturday night, popcorn, you know, action movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So Q Storm, what's your take on it?
Well, I hadn't planned on seeing this because I thought it was just going to be another Taken film.
Can you speak closer to the mic? You sound far away or something.
I'm sorry. I was saying that I hadn't planned on seeing this because I thought it was just going to be another kind of, and I'll say it, brainless action film, kind of like Taken was. I mean, you know, Taken was a decent movie, but I consider that like a just checking your brain and watch the action. But I was pleasantly surprised. The script gave me more than that. It was actually well thought out. It was a good thriller, like Sean said, the first hour and 45 minutes or so. But it suffers from, at least from my opinion, maybe it's just me and how I come to a mystery type of film. You know, the economy of characters. You only have so many characters, so you sit there kind of ruining the film for yourself. At least I do. Trying to figure out who did. Well, it must have been this person or it must have been that person. I think that, and this is one of my favorite films of all time, much like Executive Decision, I think it might have been better just to let the audience know who did it right up front so that you don't have the letdown that you have at the end of this film, because it really does kind of grind to a halt during the monologue. And it's like, you went through all of this just for that? I mean, there was no stake. There was no, we couldn't identify. You want to identify with the villain's plight as well as you do with the hero's plight.
That's exactly my point. I said the whodunit was fine. The why done it just it didn't make sense.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just wonder if it would have been better just to reveal who the person is, and then it becomes how will Liam Neeson discover who he is, and how will he prevent the tragedy. But other than that, I just thought it was a little corny that certain characters were revealed to be villains. It just seemed like it came out of nowhere. But I would say I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. It was a nice little surprise.
Yeah, I gave it 3 out of 4. So we're pretty much in agreement on. I will say one last thing on it. Now, you talked about the monologue speech. That is one of the big classic things in action movies. Roger Ebert used to call it the talking killer syndrome. The killer has the hero in his grasp. All he's got to do is pull the trigger. And he gives this big, long speech about, you know, what he's doing, why he's doing it. And that gives the hero just enough time to figure out, ooh, I can, you know, light this match. Or, ooh, I can, you know, get out of the situation. Whereas if the killer would have just shot the guy, we'd be rolling credits. So that's one of the biggest cliches in action films, the talking killer. And it's always in the Bond movies, too.
Well, they get that from comic books, though. They've been doing that in comics for 1,000 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, so Nonstop. Definitely go check it out. I say
yeah, check it out.
Worth seeing. All right, moving on to other movie news. Yeah, I'm just seeing this here as we were talking. There is a rumor, and take it as you will, that they are possibly thinking of a new trilogy of Matrix movies.
Ugh.
Hollywood strikes again. Part of me has the same
remakes or new trilogy.
Well, it's not a remake. Yeah, it's talking about it could either be a prequel or a sequel, possibly. But Latino Review is the one who broke this, and they said that they possibly have heard that the Wachowskis have sort of turned in some sort of outline.
You lost me at Wachowskis.
I love them. I'm a fan. Jupiter Ascending. Let's go. But. You can kind of hear the opinion. Would you be willing to see another Matrix movie?
If somebody else was producing and creating this, yes. The Wachowskis, I think, had one great idea. They're like M. Night Shyamalan. They had one great idea and have been chasing it ever since.
Wasn't it really not their idea? Didn't some woman sue them behind that?
Yeah, well...
Anybody can sue anybody,
a black
as
woman,
you know.
I heard.
But that doesn't necessarily mean she actually wrote it.
But she won.
No, she didn't.
She didn't?
No, that is a great internet hoax story. She didn't win a damn thing.
Yeah, I didn't hear that she won either.
I stand corrected.
That story comes out every year. Somebody, she won the $50 billion? Actually, no. I want to say her story, her case was actually unfortunately thrown out because, I guess, of her lawyer's fault. But the internet, you know, rumor or what do they call that? Myth or whatever
is that urban legend.
Urban legend is that she did win and won billions of dollars.
Oh, she didn't win and she can get seven. You know,
yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean she didn't do it, didn't actually write it, but yeah, that's a hard case, hard thing to prove, unfortunately. But go ahead.
You look at the first Matrix, compare that to the second two.
Yeah.
She's got a strong case as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Somebody else wrote that movie.
And then you look at Speed Racer.
Oh.
Well, everything they've done until this new movie they've got has been an adaptation of something else, except for the first Matrix and the other first movie that they had before that.
Speed Racer was terrible.
Bound, which I loved that movie.
Oh, I did a big write-up on Bound. It's actually in my top 15 greatest movies of all time, but we can talk about that later.
You know what? You know what? Since we're speaking film, Sean, I have to crack you. Uh-oh. How could you go see Peabody and Sherman and have never seen the cartoon, man?
I'm more of a movie guy than a TV guy. So
you never watched Peabody and Sherman and Bullwinkle when you were a kid?
I remember it, but I don't have fond memories of it.
You're killing me, man.
Sorry.
I don't even know what that is.
wait, am I the only one who knows who Peabody and Sherman are from the cartoon?
No, I know who Peabody and Sherman is.
All right, cool. Now, Q, have you seen that trailer?
I want to say I have, and I actually thought this looks like it might actually be something.
Oh!
Wait, Big Sexy, you don't like it?
I think they are so far off of who Mr. Peabody is. It's not even funny, man.
Well, see, that's where you lose me. I wasn't that vested that it mattered that they kind of played with the characters. I just remember the dog was smart. The kid was an idiot.
Well, yeah. the dog was
oh, really, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I've seen these trailers. Yeah, cool on that one.
Well, I'm going in fresh. I'm seeing it, right, I think, right. Tuesday. Tuesday, right. I think.
You're the reviewer. I'll wait to hear your words on it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. So we're talking about Matrix. Also, did anybody see the headshot of the new Flash from the TV series?
Yes.
Yes.
What did you think of that?
I thought it looked better than the TV show back in the 90s.
Oh, God, yes.
Hey, actually, I've seen the pictures of the guy. The guy, I watched the original series. The guy didn't look that bad in the outfit.
You know, I guess I'm getting that over or superimposed with seeing the four guys in Big Bang wear the Flash outfit. That's just blurred my mind for it. But I don't like the chin strap. I understand it. I don't like it, but the suit looks great.
Now, is this the guy who played, what's his name? Was it Wally West in the Arrow series? The last,
yeah, I think it's a spinoff. Yeah,
yeah.
It's the same actor.
Yeah, same character.
And actually, he's playing Barry Allen.
No, you said same character. I'm saying, is it the same actor?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is a spinoff.
He seemed pretty young, didn't he? He seemed very young.
Well, they always do that on these CW type shows.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see what they do with it. I love that they have him in a full costume, you know, at least in the head part. I'm like, okay, they committed. And it's not Smallville. I give them that.
Is the Flash really a good property to bring to the screen, though? Mm, his powers just don't seem that compelling to me.
If written right, he would be. I think what Jeff Johns did in books was exciting.
No, well, I'm saying the books is one thing, but, I mean, no matter how you write it, all how compelling? Who can move fast?
How compelling was Green Arrow before they came up with this series? I wasn't clamoring for it.
Green Arrow is someone who, I mean, there's a reason that what's her name? Katniss, when the film came out, became. That's when you saw bow and arrows everywhere. It's cool.
I think his point is to say Green Arrow could be seen kind of dumb, but obviously that
is. I'm talking about his power set. Is what I'm focusing on.
Well, yeah, I guess his point is to say the Flash, you could think that way, but I don't know. It could be very exciting. I think, you know, his guy that moves fast, and again, depending on what sort of villains and what positions they have, no more different than, say, Superman or something, who could do anything. Like, what would be the point, too? But
I completely disagree.
Well, my thing is, if they make him close to the JLU cartoon series, they got a runaway hit, that no pun intended.
Yeah,
I mean, because he has some cool things he can do. I mean, I've seen him making cyclones and using his arms for sonic booms, and I'm like, yeah, he can do some cool things.
I'll just say this: I think, and I'm going back to the TV show. What I vaguely remember of that, whenever he used his powers, it just looked really silly to me. I couldn't take it seriously.
Well, we got different special effects now, obviously. Different things. So we'll see. If it's any, I just take what they did with Arrow, which I enjoy that. So I'm hoping the same care is used here and they even ramp it up a little bit. Also, got to add in, they've announced that Jada Pinkett Smith is going to be a villain on the Gotham TV show.
What Gotham TV show?
Oh, yeah. Oh. They've announced their Gotham TV series. I don't know if it's CW or whatever the channel is, but
Fox,
excuse me. So yeah, they're doing a pre-Batman TV series. I think it starts when Bruce Wayne is like 12. I don't know if he's necessarily the main character in this, but they said, I think we talked about this before, you know, the producer said at the end of the series he will be Batman, but obviously, it's going to be focused on Joker.
They're going to reveal all of the... This is what I hate. I hate it when they did it in Smallville, even though I didn't watch that show regularly. But you're going to see all of the villains when they were kids, too.
Oh, I hate that.
Young Joker.
I mean, what is a young Joker? He didn't go crazy until he got doused in the chemicals, right?
Yeah.
So what's, how interesting is that going to be?
Oh, yeah. We'll see. The other TV news, I didn't write this down, was that Marvel and Netflix have announced that they're going to start shooting the Defenders TV series, which is, of course, Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Jessica Drew TV series in New York here very soon. So I'm interested to see the outcome of that.
If they have Michael Bendis involved, or if they could use his Daredevil run, it would be out of sight. It really would.
Yeah.
I would be very interested to see a Daredevil on screen. That sounds interesting to me.
I want to see the Luke Cage. Like, this is an opportunity to have another black hero. I'm curious.
But what cage are they going to show? Are they going to show, you know, Mr. 70s tiara and the yellow shirt?
Well, no. There's a press conference with Joe Sakata? If I'm saying his name, Marvel guy?
Quesada,
I'm sorry. And you can see on the back there, they show the more current version, Luke Cage, from the book. So obviously that's the one they're going with.
Has there been any casting news or?
I don't think they've announced anything, no.
Terry Crews, anybody?
I can see that.
Well, Lois is not Tyrese.
Oh, God.
Tyrese? Oh, God, no.
Hey, they've been, people have been doing that fantasy casting of him for the longest.
Tyrese Gibson.
Yeah. But, I mean, hey, Mike, just to, I don't mean to go on a tangent real quick, but yeah. I post something in an email since we're talking about it now. I wanted to get the fellas' opinions on it. I was listening to Comic Geek Speak. They do a regular spotlight on several characters, Avengers, Superman, X-Men.
Yes.
Right now they're doing it on Fantastic Four.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And they were talking about where the comic book industry was in the 50s, and it had me thinking about, you know, how the comic book industry is doing now. And I just feel like they're on the verge of extinction because they're in this digital age and have all this technology, and like the music industry and the public – the magazine and newspaper industry before them, they're like burying their head in the sand when they really have a chance with all of this content to do something similar to HBO Go, and I can't believe I'm saying this, the WWE Network, have all this content and have a really cool subscription service. And my thought was, is like, why doesn't a Marvel or a DC take all of their back issues, which is thousands upon thousands of issues, create an app with on a monthly subscription service and say, hey, here you are, $10 a month. You can read every comic we ever published. And then if they wanted to make some more money, say there's a premium service that instead of having to go to the comic book stores and get the new issues, we'll put it right there on the app for you to see, to read anytime you want.
Well,
I don't think they want to offend their retailers. That's why.
But, you know, the video game industry does – well, the video game does – they have digital video games. Of course, they can't – they don't undercut them as much as the as their big box retailers are. But, I mean, that is something – and you say they don't want to offend their retailers, but how much money are they really making off of them? Because for me, I haven't bought a comic book since 2008. But if you came up with a service like this, I'm sure there are more people out there that have my mindset than those that actually go to the comic book store and buy the comics.
Well, Mike, I'm sure you will correct me if I'm wrong, but the app, the Comixology app, I believe I read recently within the last couple of months that app is doing gangbusters, and that's a model where you go on and you buy the books. Some of them are high as $4.99 per title. So if they're successful and people are buying the books for the same price you go into the store and buy them, why would they be motivated to say just pay us $10 a month and you can look at it whatever you want to?
I would jump in to say that I have become a better or a bigger customer of Comixology over the last couple months. Now, here's the thing. I use Comixology because I love buying the DC digital-only books. You know, I'm a big fan of Injustice. And I've started buying Adventures of Superman, which is a weekly thing on there. Now, those are only 99 cents. And it's interesting that if you look and see what is the most popular products on Comixology or the DC app or Marvel app, which is powered by Comixology, at least on Comixology and the DC one, it is those 99-cent weekly books are the top sellers, which I believe Injustice is the top-selling digital book of all time. I have no problem buying those. I think the price, they're priced accordingly, 99 cents, but I don't normally buy the normal weekly books or, you know, that come out monthly or whatever that are $3.99 digitally. Because I feel like, well, one, I just don't feel like it's the, why would I pay the same price if I can go to the store? Now they ask the question, well, do you buy the books at all? And I'm going to admittedly say, no. I will still, no. That doesn't mean I'm not reading them. But
exactly.
But this last week and the week before, I did go to my local comic store and I did buy some books because I was like, you know what? I still care about this. And I have been reading some stuff for free. But if it was convenient, if it's convenient for me, I am going to buy them because I do like them. So I did buy. I spent like, I don't know, I spent only $20. Which shame. Yeah, I got, what, 3 books or 4 books, and I bought previews, you know, the big catalog. But I would love a service like this, but I think it would undercut the game by doing that. Again, I'd have no problem paying $10, but what happens to all those writers and artists? Do they take a pay cut? Now, are they taking a pay cut because I ain't buying them in the first place? Probably so. But I just feel like they're all priced too high, which is another issue.
Well, maybe if you say ongoing issues as they come out, you don't put that on there. But the fact that they do have this catalog, and again, I got to give the WWE credit. I did not. I thought, whatever. I'm not going to spend $10 a month for this. I can, if whatever I want to go see, I can find it. But you know, there's something to be said about having this amount of content at your disposal in one place, and it's more convenient than having to find it on YouTube in 340p or find it on Daily Motion or go on Pirate Bay and try to download it from a torrent. And it's just to me, it's like, okay, this would be a helpful way to expose your characters to a new audience. And on top of that, you're making money off of something that you're not making, you're currently not making money off of.
Yeah, the other thing, real quick, let me just throw in real quick on you. Okay. The other part of this we got to remember is that, you know, Marvel's owned by Disney, right? And if you take the comic book portion of Disney's interest in that particular company, that's got to be chicken feed to them. Like, they probably really don't care. Like, it's not going to affect their bottom line at all. You know, Time Warner, who may end up being owned by Comcast, they own DC Comics. Do you really think their boardroom meeting, they're really going to sit down and say, we got to create an incentive program to jumpstart this comic division that makes us pennies anyway, and these people are already willing to pay exorbitant prices for these books? No, they have no incentive to want to change what they have going on because they're not. It's not that big of an industry to them. And I think Marvel does have some sort of program like what you described, actually, don't they? It's hella expensive, like $100 a year or something like that, and you get everything. I think they do have. And you get, actually, if you sign up, they have you this, they send you this Ultron action figure thing. I mean, it's a very expensive thing, but I think you pay $100 and you get all their digital stuff, and they send you this hardcover book or something like that. But again, I think that Disney is not going to. It's just not. They didn't buy it for the comics, right? They bought it for those characters and the ideas that they can pull from that. And you're right; they have years of stories already done. So, and again, those graphic novels are sold in bookstores. They're sold through Amazon and different places. And they're sold on Comixology. And I'm very enticed to start buying some of them. I'm like, man, I can buy the graphic novels digitally. That's kind of cool. So I don't see why they would just gut that, what little business that there is there, to try and build up a business that they can probably see is dying anyway.
Let me ask you guys this. Speaking of Disney, and this is just something that popped into my head. With Disney and their business models and whatnot and always reissuing things, are they ever going to reissue Song of the South, or are they going to just try to bury that?
No, they're, no. You'll never see that again.
Why?
Just the historical backlash, but I think they're afraid of a backlash for the quote unquote stereotypical images that it displays. So I doubt you'll ever see that out again. It's just my opinion.
I don't know, man. Sounds close to censorship to me.
Well, it's self-censorship.
I mean, yeah, self-imposed, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, too, what Ant was describing sounds suspiciously like lotus flower.
Oh.
did I go there? Yeah, I went there.
I don't know how lotus flower worked. So.
It didn't.
It was terrible. Oh, my God. It was like, did you ever have that CD-ROM, the interactive CD-ROM?
I still know? Have it.
I have it too. And I've never been able to navigate it after, 20 years. I still can't get past the first screen. It is so – and he made Lotus Flower so needlessly complicated from the spelling of the website with the three in there to all people want to do when they go to a site, they want to see home, videos, bio, music. Click, 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 click. You got on Lotus Flower, you had to, you know, make sure the arrow was in this certain spot. And it was just crazy. And I quit using it after like 2 months. I'm like, it shouldn't be this complicated to access the material. And then, you know, us fans are going to do it. But the average, you know, person is not going to, A, try to figure out how to spell Lotus Flower correctly. You know, it should have just been, you know, purpleprints.com or, you know, something other than that. But I digress.
Yeah, just the thing is called Marvel Unlimited. So it's like you're all access past the Marvel Universe. It's you can actually do a monthly, I guess. A monthly is $10 a month. But they have one that's the annual pass, $99 yearly. And it shows this figurine thing that they give you, but it says access to over 13,000 comics. Explore Marvel Universe Ultimate. Explore Marvel Unlimited online or on the go with your mobile app. Save up to 12 comics on your mobile device to read when you're offline. More classic and newer issues added every week as soon as 6 months after they hit shelves. So it's sort of like their own in-house version of a Netflix for comics deal. I don't know how popular this is or whatever, but they have different events and things going on. 15% off digital comics and collections at the Marvel Digital Shop. So it doesn't include like the new stuff, which Netflix doesn't include new stuff either, right? But I don't know. I think so. They may be, they're actually kind of doing that. You know, again, it's the fact that we're comic fans and you don't know about it just sort of goes to my point that it's such a small industry unto itself, so even within it, when there are programs like this, we're not even aware of it, you know.
Wait, when you're offline,
so you don't have to be online to always view the comics.
Okay, shut me up. This is something new. I might have to get this.
Isn't that similar to like when you buy a DVD or a Blu-ray and it has like the code to go to a website, put it in, and then you have a digital copy of it as well as the physical copy. Is that the same concept?
Well, yeah, but this would the difference would be if you bought that DVD and he gave you access to 13 other movies.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so there you go. Actually, I'm looking at the monthly one for only $10. You can get 13,000 access to read all these other books. That's kind of interesting. All right, I think we're going to wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
Because we got to go over to the Prince house after this. So you have been listening to This Is What We Do on podcastjuice.net. I will have links to everyone's either Twitter tag or MySpace page in the page. You know who they are. We have Big Sexy and Sack, Chew Storm, Aunt Pooh, and Mr. Sean Hill. We want to thank you for listening, supporting us, and we will see you next time. Peace.